Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. All right, the numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics for October 2011 as sold through Diamond to retailers. These are sales to retailers. These are not end reader sales. I want to be very clear on that because this was, frankly, a very historic month. For the second time in a row, DC had the lion's share of the total unit sales for the top 300. They had 56.07% of the unit sales for the top 300. Now, that is the largest percentage any publisher has had during the final order era, which started back in March 2003. It actually exceeds the highest Marvel has ever had by half a percent. And it also exceeds it by about 500,000 units, a little over, actually. Because when Marvel did it back in June 2009... with their big win or whatever, they did it with 3,648,716 estimated units. So that's one of those where the horse race aspect of who has the biggest percentage and stuff really doesn't necessarily reflect the actual unit sales from month to month. The pie shrinks and grows, and who has more of the pie, that's great, but if it's a much smaller pie, who cares?
You know? The other thing I thought was very interesting is because of the huge amount of reorders from DC figuring into this month's total of the number one issues, that, you know, the total items DC has on the list is 129, and, you know, a lot of those are not, you know, like, what did you say, the only one, Men of War was the only one that didn't make it.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned last week on the Weekly Comics Spotlight. DC had 77 new items, 52 reorder items. Now somebody's saying, well, wait, if Men of War wasn't a reorder thing, how could they have had 52? Was it like a Vertigo thing? No, it was all new 52 stuff. Because of the different price point for the print versus print and digital combo pack for Justice League number 1, it's taking up two slots last month and two slots this month. Which is how we get the 52 reorders out of the 51 titles that placed with the first issues again on the list. And we had talked about this last month as a definite possibility that because we were seeing a lot in the shipping list of, hey, there's extra printings coming out and whatever, that this could happen. Now, some people have commented that, well, you know, those second printings don't really count and stuff, to which my reply is, why not? Really, what we're talking about is how many people are getting their hands on that first issue story to read it and determine if they want to go with the series. From a collectible point of view, I completely agree first prints are not the same as a second printing. However, as far as these sales figures go, Diamond reports the total sales, total reorders and stuff. They give me no granularity into this was first print, second print, or third print. So I have to treat them all as one. I have no choice in the matter. Now, what's interesting is the total units for DC were 4,256,253 units. That is just staggering. I mean, last month we talked about what to use as kind of a benchmark going forward for DC, and I'd kind of settled on about a 3.2 million unit mark for the DC Universe line. Because that was a little bit higher than the total estimated sales for the first issues in September, which really was only 51 of them because Justice League number 1 really came out in August. And those total sales for those first issues in September, 3,199,096 units. So it's like, okay, let's round up 904 units to the 3.2 million just because that's a lot easier to talk. But again, that also gives them the advantage of the Justice League number 1 being not in that total and all of these miniseries they're doing. And really, what just astounded me is you would expect, typically, about a 20% drop on a second issue. So that would take our estimated benchmark as to what realistically they probably would have done down to about 2.6 million. Well, DC knocked it out of the park. They exceeded the 3.2 million units, getting up to an estimated 3,217,217 units for just the second issues of the New 52. Now, that includes the print only and the digital combo pack versions of Justice League number 2. And there was about 180,709 estimated units for the print only, and about another 15,860 for the print digital combo pack. But there was another 148,597 units just from the miniseries set in the DC Universe. Huntress, the Penguin Pain and Prejudice miniseries, first issue, the Legion Secret Origin, My Greatest Adventure, and Shade. Add to that the reorder activity of the 670,380 estimated units for the first issues that placed on the list again, the DC Universe wound up doing a staggering 4,036,194 estimated units in October. So the second issues hit and exceeded the benchmark I was kind of using. Add in the other stuff, they blow it out of the water. Add in the sales outside of the DC Universe, which is about another 220,059 estimated units, and that's where we get that over four and a quarter million units for DC. Staggering month. That is the most units a single publisher has ever done in the Final Order era for the top 300 comics. Previous record holder was Marvel back in December 2008. With about 4,154,694 units. So, beat it by about 100,000 units. Still, it's not too bad. The question is really, can they keep going with that or not? Now, one point of clarification, I was not including Batman Odyssey as being part of the DC Universe product line. Really, you could argue either way on that, but I think you and I would both agree, Bob, it really feels like it's out of continuity.
Yeah.
So that's the way I leaned on that. Now, one of the things that's really impressive, I think, about DC's staggering success is that they really didn't do it at the expense of the other publishers. I mean, again, this is the most units any publisher has ever sold. Marvel's sales of 31.79% of the total units for the top 300 comics wound up being about 2,413,010 units, which really not that far from kind of how they've been averaging in the last year or so. So it's not like they gutted the competition or something. So I think that's a really good sign right there. You know, what's interesting is this was not the top unit sales month for the Final Order era. Didn't even place in the top five. There were five other months that actually had more comic book units sold in the top 300 units than this month. And really, it comes down to, yeah, DC's shaking stuff up. They've gotten people into the stores, but it takes all the publishers, to a degree, working both competitively and in unison to keep readers coming back and to really get all the things selling on you know, gangbusters and stuff. But to me, this was not something I had originally anticipated way back when the relaunch reboot was announced, but I hadn't really factored in the reorder activity or DC's really amazing ability to keep the product flowing. I really don't know that I have heard any instance where a retailer couldn't get more copies of what they needed. And the fact that they could keep those units flowing is, I think, what allowed this to happen.
Well, I think it's really significant that it appears to be people opening their wallet and buying extra comics, as opposed to, as you said, they're not robbing, you know, the other publishers to get these sales. Now, it's kind of hard to say on some of the indie stuff, since the bottom of the list here, you know, are people sticking with their Marvel and DCs and they're dumping some of their indie stuff? You know, this list cuts off at a point over 5,000 units, where a lot of times we'll talk all the way down to, you know, the low 3,000s or even high 2,000s at the slot number 300.
You go far enough back in the top 300, we get down to about 600 or 700 units. I think a lot more comics are being published these days. Really, though, what's interesting is, yes, a lot of the smaller publishers, the back half, were really pushed off the list this time around. But I think that's because more things just sold better than sales were taken away from those. The Marvel sales of about 2.4 million is really not that much below their average of about 2.6 million for the last year. And really, that difference between where they did this month and that average can really be attributed to a lack of strong sellers for Marvel. They only had four titles selling over 60,000 units this time around. You know, one of them was Incredible Hulk number 1, which is at rank 7, 106,472 units. That was their top seller. The next thing was Wolverine and the X-Men number 1, which did 95,855 units, so it failed to crack the 100,000 mark. Now, it'll probably make up for that with reorder activity, whatever. I'm not too worried about that. And then Fear Itself number 7, with 95,599 estimated units. Those are the only and the other one to do over 60,000 units, down at rank 22, Uncanny X-Men 544, which I think is the last issue of that series, with 60,212 units. So it only cracked the 60,000 mark by a couple hundred units. Now, it used to be, a couple of years back, we would see most of the Avengers titles in this area, we would see whatever else was kind of hot at the moment. And it wouldn't have taken too much, you know, too many more titles up in that area to really put Marvel back on in kind of where they had been selling on average over the last year or so. But, I mean, the sales on the DC stuff, the Justice League number 2 sales topped the list, 180,709 estimated units. And again, there's the combo pack later in the list, like I mentioned. You know, Batman, which is the benchmark title, not that there's anything magic about that, 172,428 estimated units. And it's one of those things where I'm kind of going to ignore the delta percentages right now for DC, because I really think the whole returnability thing throws this into a really big question mark as to, you know, what's being reported, what's not being reported, when do they have to return, who's going to return, are reorders going to compensate for that? It's going to be a while for all of this to really kind of shake out and see how the dust settles. But with DC having, you know, six titles over 110,000 units, to me, that's a great sign. You know, I think that the new 52, to say, you know, if anyone's thinking it didn't succeed, at least at the outset, they're wrong. I mean, the numbers both last month and this month really, I think, show that the initial wave of enthusiasm and sales and stuff, at least at the retail level, really proved this out as a huge success for them. Now, whether it will continue to be that huge success, don't know yet. We'll find out. Personally, I think the seeds for its potential destruction are already sown in the pages of the comics, because they're being very ambiguous about the backstory, the continuity. Is it a continuation of what had happened before Flashpoint? Is it not? Is it a reboot? Is it a relaunch? All of the stuff we've talked about a lot of times on the Publisher Spotlight, on the Weekly Spotlight, all that stuff. Sooner or later, it's going to get to the point where the creators themselves, the editors themselves, get kind of confused, start contradicting themselves, and could really kind of have the universe almost unravel if somebody starts poking at the continuity threads too hard. Now, maybe that won't phase new readers, maybe that won't phase some old readers, but it's a risky endeavor, and at this point, one of the big risk factors, I think, for the new 52. The lack of most of these being anything close to done-in-one stories, I think, is unfortunate. I think they would have done better if more titles had been along the lines of Superman, where I felt it's the most meaty, most fulfilling title they've got these days. But it barely made it, well, it made it into the top 10, actually, by a decent amount, with 94,233 units. So, you know, it's I think it's wonderful seeing how many titles we've got, you know, so high up on the list. The fact they're all from DC, that's, I personally have no problem with that, but I'd be happy if we had these kinds of strong sales from Marvel, DC, and a number of other publishers as well. You know, it's disappointing that Marvel really doesn't have anything to kind of fight back with in terms of these sales and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, now that Fear itself is over, what, you know, what's Marvel pulling out to, you know, you got
well, you got Fearless,
Point One, right? I guess. You got the Fearless, you got the Spin-Out series, but I don't know that they're going to be doing 90-95,000 like Fear itself did. I'll be curious on those Point One issues, Fear itself 7.1, 7.2, and 7.3.
I'm very curious about that. I think that is... on the one hand, I'd like to think that the good folks at Marvel are doing that because they are, those things are such integral epilogues to Fear itself. The more cynical side of me thinks, no, they're just doing it for a cheap sales gimmick. I hope I'm wrong on the cynical side. I hope I'm right on the, it's just really that important to the Fear itself arc. But it's one of those things that these publishers have gone back to the well a couple of times too many in almost a bait-and-switch manner. I mean, Incredible Hulk number one, Fear itself, Fearless number one, arguably both spun out of Fear itself. Now, Fear itself, Fearless clearly did. It is the continuation of the Aftermath storyline. It did down at rank 24, 59,464 units. So it's like, wow, you know, that's quite a bit lower than the 95,599 units of Fear itself number seven. Whereas Hulk, which spun out of a 2-3-page epilogue out of it, yes, Hulk was involved in the story, but really, the series spun out of, arguably, that tiny little epilogue, if even that, because really I don't think it did, and it did about 11,000 units better than Fear Itself number 7. But frankly, I think the Hulk number 1 would have sold about that well regardless of the epilogue.
Yeah, we talked about that, you know, a couple of episodes ago, that it didn't really feel like a particular spin out of Fear itself, other than the fact that they stuck a couple of pages in the back of that Fear itself number seven.
Yeah, I mean, for me, for it to be a spin out, it's got to come out of the meat and potatoes of the story. Now, whether you tack a little epilogue on or a couple of scenes or whatever, I mean, I still don't think the death of Captain America really spun out of Civil War. It happened at the end of it, but not part and parcel of the crux of the event. Mm-hmm. Whereas Wolverine and the X-Men clearly spun out of the events of X-Men Regenesis and X-Men Schism, and sold a lot better than those. But it's interesting, because I'm hearing anecdotally from people that this has brought a lot of new readers in, a lot of former readers in with the new 52. It's helping sales both of their books, of other publishers' books. I think IDW's done pretty well as a result, and kind of a rising tide lifts all ships sort of a thing. Yet I'm also hearing from some retailers that, wow, their number twos for DC are not selling well, they're going to have all these returns, and that, ooh, it's, you know, the sky is falling kind of thing. And I'm not trying to belittle those retailers, because I think this is, I think all of this feedback or all of these comments and stuff are true at individual stores. There are some that simply... I can easily imagine there are stores that, regardless of how good the DC material is, they might not be able to sell DC comics at all, just because their customer base is very, you know, anti-DC for whatever reason. Flip side, there are going to be stores that do much better with the Vertigo stuff than a Marvel, you know, Fear itself or Civil War kind of a thing. Each store in its customer base is very unique, very different, and... You know, what we're looking at here is the overall trends, kind of the wisdom of the crowd, if you will, from the retailers in mass, and not from any in specific. Mm-hmm. And some of what we see here may fly, you know, flat directly in the face of the experience of specific retailers. You know, I know, I think it was Brian Hibbs had said that, what was it, his Green Arrow sales had plummeted to like a third of what they were. And what we're seeing here with the Green Arrow sales is it really... The deltas on the number two for DC all right around about a 20% downtick from the number ones, but that may also be how much Diamond is underreporting some of those sales on the grounds of potential returnability and stuff, which is why I don't want to really get too much into the deltas at this point. There are some that have gone up and whatnot. Really, I think, the returnability, the way DC has put their marketing muscle behind this, is making this really a fun thing to kind of watch play out. You know, if somebody told me a year ago that pretty much everything DC sold in September for their superhero line would be back on with reorder activity the following month, I wouldn't have believed them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of those reorders, the top one, I think that's pretty relevant, was, filter the list real quick. Actually, it was Aquaman with 28,243 units, and I can totally see that. I think that's one that people maybe underestimated how good it would be. I mean, Jeff Johns, who was the artist on that? Was Ivan Reis?
Yeah.
Beautiful book, great story, and one that really, I think, has some strong legs to it. You know, as we mentioned again, Men of War was the one item that didn't show up with reorder activity. The lowest one that did show up was Static Shock with 5,264 estimated units of reorder activity. Beaten out just a little bit by OMAC and then Hawk and Dove. And then we got Blackhawks down there near the bottom, too. Trying to think if there are other ones that kind of popped up a lot higher than I would have expected on the reorder activity. It's one of those where, again, the fact that all of these showed up is just staggering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The question that isn't directly about this, but it'll come into play a little later. What happens when a publisher overships a book as far as the counts go?
My understanding on that, and I could be wrong on this, there are a couple of things that influence how the numbers get reported. So I think it's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up. With something like an overship, my understanding is these are the sales that were actually invoiced to retailers. And with overships, typically what they do is say, okay, you ordered, say, 10 copies. I'm going to give you 15. And if you can sell the 15, I'm going to charge you for them or not. Again, it's a little different between different times. I'm not a retailer. I don't have all the ins and outs on this.
I was just wondering if you send them back with no harm, no foul, or whatever, because my understanding from looking at some news items on the internet was that Marvel had actually double shipped that 0.1 issue. You know, like whatever, if somebody ordered 10 copies, they sent them 20, for instance.
Yeah. Now, despite what people may think, that's not just free for the retailers, in so much as they've had to pay shipping for that. And sometimes, particularly with a 64-page thing like that 0.1, that could add up a little. This is also why retailers are sometimes up in arms when, like, CDs or other inserts that are a little heavy get included in comics. But I would think, and I would hope, that the sales figures that Diamond reports are just that, the sales figures, not what shipped. In the past, they have had, back when they did the promotional priced 9-cent Fantastic Four, the 10-cent Batman Adventure, the 10-cent Superman and stuff, they put asterisks by those saying, hey, this is priced below, you know, how much it cost them to do, and this is a promotional gimmick or whatever. It basically spotlighting it's not normal sales. So just like they're doing right now with the, hey, most of these DC things are returnable, therefore we're reporting them at reduced figures. Now, they don't say by how much they're reduced, but they do try to clarify when things are not just, hey, this is exactly what was ordered. That kind of answer the question?
Yeah.
But really, I think the mindset behind the overshipping, and I know DC many years back experimented with this quite a bit, although they were very cagey about their responses, and Bob Swain's attitude on that was, you know, we paid the tuition, why should somebody else learn for free? And it's like, well, I can't argue with that. That's, they takes the chances, they learns the lessons, they should benefit from that, no question about that. But They overshipped a lot of things at one point just to see if they could hit that saturation point. And if retailers had more copies, would things sell better both for that issue and down the line? And I have to think that experience really was what led to DC being able to keep a lot of these first issues and stuff available, and particularly so quickly this time around. You know, those 28,000 units of Aquaman of reorder activity, I really doubt they overprinted by that much. And I know they did second and third printings on some of these books, or actually second printings on, I think, all of the books, which implies that the Men of War probably just placed below the 300, not that it didn't have reorder activity, just not enough to make it on the list this time around. The fact that they were ready to do that kind of a turnaround, keep the product going and stuff, has got to be a direct result of the experimentation they'd done years back.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, like you said, interesting that the bottom of the list is over 5,000 units. And again, that's just the overwhelming amount of reorder activity we had this time around. Which really, you know, at the bottom of the spreadsheet I have here under the 300, I've got some statistics and stuff that typically are kind of interesting, but this time around are really just skewed. You know, we've got 180 items that were at the $299 price point. Well, that's most of the... That's at least 48 of the 52 times 2, you know, just with DC having so many books.
Right.
You know, the total losses versus total gains is kind of skewed just compared to particularly like last month when there were so many items that didn't show up on the list before because they were new titles. You know, this time we've got a lot that sold less than the previous issue. It's just, it really monkeys with the statistics and stuff I'm trying to do on some of these things, with particularly this big of a relaunch. Some of the titles that did stick around on the list, despite Marvel and DC having such a huge presence, I mean, really, you get down to whittling those guys out. You only have 87 titles left on the list. And the top one from non-Marvel DC was Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 9, number 2. This is off about a little over 15% from the first issue. They're at rank 64. And its estimated sales are 36,448 units. Now, when Season 8 launched way back when, a few years ago, that was one of those that started up near the top of the charts and hovered around the top 10 for quite some time. So even a tried and true, you know, a property like Buffy, which has a fairly loyal fan base, it whittles away over time. Now what's interesting is ranks 78 and 79 were two issues of Walking Dead, 90 and 89 respectively, with 90 doing 31,778 units and 89 a little below that with 31,351 units. So there was about a 427 unit gain between those two. And one shipped at the beginning of the month, the other shipped at the end, with I think that issue 89 being almost a month late, actually. But really, as far as ongoing non-Marvel DC titles, with the rare exception of like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Walking Dead is king of the hill, which really I don't find too surprising. I do find it a little odd that we've got two Legion titles going on from DC these days, yet the Star Trek Legion one from IDW is selling only about 20,950 units, which is well below how even the second issues were doing of Legion Lost, Legion Secret Origins, actually first issue of Legion Secret Origins, and Legion of Superheroes. Legion of Superheroes number 2, 42,504. Legion Lost, 38,385. And Legion Secret Origins number 1, 38,248. So it's like half those readers almost didn't really care about that Star Trek Legion series, which I think is a shame. I read the first issue and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes, you know, about the, let's just say, the metering that goes on between what the comic shops choose to order and what people are able to buy. You know,
I would love to know what percentage of stores ordered every item on this list. Or not. Well, let me rephrase. For each item on this list, I would like to know what percentage of the stores ordered it. Is the problem with Legion of the Star Trek Legion stuff that 50% of the stores didn't even carry it, or that it was carried at a low level by all of them? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that goes to your point of is it even getting into the stores?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's the former. You know, it's just, boy, with the creators that are on it, I mean, you know, Chris Roberson's writing it, and he writes like very popular Vertigo series. You know, he's got a following. You got Star Trek. You got it's not like it's some fly by night kind of thing. And the art on it is by established artists. It's really, really good art and everything. It's just
not only established artists, but yeah. Jeff and Phil Moy are, I think, yeah, some of the few artists that have done both Star Trek and Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very thin crowd to do, and they do a great job.
It just seems strange that, you know, something like that does so low. There's got to be more of an audience for something like that.
I completely agree. But I think part of the problem, less so with an IDW thing, but really, once you get past Marvel and DC, I think there's going to be a knockoff in sales just in general. Once you get past Image, IDW, and Dark Horse, probably in that order, but not necessarily, there's going to be a drop-off in sales. You know, once you get to that back half of the book of previews and stuff, and the top-selling item this time around was Boys, 59, at rank 134 with 17,533 units. I've thought for the longest time, I know we've mentioned it a number of times on the show, that really the growth opportunity for the comic industry, granted, Marvel and DC just proved they can get a lot of sales, you know. Granted, not a well they can go back to too many times of relaunching their whole universe, but the big opportunity is not with the big publishers. It's by shoring up and strengthening all of the little guys. You know, Dynamite does some really good stuff when it comes out with the Warlord of Mars or the Project Superheroes or the new Kirby Genesis stuff. I think they strip mine some of that and put out too much too fast and deplete the power out of it. Whereas if they had been a little slower and steadier, and maybe they couldn't afford to be with their licensing terms, I don't know. But if they had been with Star Trek, with they had the Green Hornet stuff, right? Yeah.
Yes.
They could have kept all of those franchises, all of those properties kind of going with a title or two, but no more, every month, versus almost burning them out pretty quick.
Well, and it's not even a matter of metering. You know, in some cases, like Warlord of Mars, you know, it's just like, how many Warlord of Mars titles do you need to have? You know, these Mars titles. And, you know, they did one, then they did the second one with Deja Thoris, then they did the third one, and now they're going to do a fourth one, which is kind of a pastiche, really, because it's Gulliver Jones kind of crossing over with Warlord of Mars. And, you know, Gulliver Jones, while Sun on Mars, is not by Edgar Rice Burroughs. You know, so they're just like strip mining that franchise, and they run the risk. I guess they track what results they get and have determined that this is the way to go. But it seems, you know, for the extra sales they get, there are people, you know, like me, for instance, who say, "Oh, geez, I'm just going to drop this stuff." And I know you dropped the Warlord of Mars stuff at a certain point too.
I think about the time the third one came up.
Yeah, you just said, "Well, you know, I can read one, I can maybe read two. When you put a third one in there, I'm out."
Well, and part of that was a response to how they'd taken the Green Hornet property. They had like six or seven going at once in different continuities. And it's like, yeah, the Warlord of Mars is going to have tighter continuity, different time zones, whatever, but I wasn't that interested in the property. Rather than dip my toe in a little, it's either, you know, very much in or out of the pool for me sometimes. You know, I'm at the point right now where it's like, you know, I'm really kind of liking the Kirby Genesis stuff. Do I want to... And I've actually stopped pre-ordering some of the books. You know, all of them, actually. And the question is, You know, I'm questioning that decision. Do I want to stay in that universe or not? Because I'm liking what I'm reading, but they're doing like a Captain Victory series, a Silver Star series, I forget what else. Like five different ones, it seems like. And, you know, are they going to burn out that property like they did Project Superheroes, like they did, I think, with Green Hornet and stuff? Now, it may well be that the license terms are, hey, you get this property for a calendar year, do with it what you will or something, at which point it makes sense to kind of burn through it fast. But that's a very much scorched earth mentality, and I think comics work best when you get people into the habitual buying pattern. Going back to the store every week, having something for them every week, not necessarily the same property every week. And that's something with a smaller publisher that's hard to do. How do you keep somebody coming back if they just want the Kirby Genesis stuff, or just the Green Hornet, or whatever? But that's where I think a cooperative aspect to the industry needs to come into play, where between all of the publishers, is there something to get that reader back every week, or every other week, or at least often enough? And you come out with the stuff on time. You know, if you go a couple of months, a better part of a year between issues, I really don't care how good the issue is, you're killing your sales potential. You may not actually lose sales. We've seen some cases where people wait indefinitely, but that's the anomaly. That's not the norm.
Right.
You know, I look at the few items this time around from the back half of previews, and really there's 36 items out of 300. Now, again, DC had 50 extra items over that on the list. And, you know, you filter out Dynamite, that count goes down to like 22. You know, you filter out, I think Boom's the next biggest one, you know, suddenly down, I guess, only to 17 or whatever. You got a lot of Zenoscope, some Archie, Avatar. Really, there's not that many publishers kind of represented at that point. And, again, this is an odd month to look at that kind of stuff just because of how strong DC in particular was. I mean, to put into perspective how strong DC was, the percentage difference between Marvel and DC in terms of the breakdown of the top 300 was... How much was that this time around? It was... flip to another sheet real quick. Pull that up. It was... all right. It was... last month, it was 7.96%, which I think exceeded all of the percentage, you know... differences in the few months DC was above Marvel. And this time around, it was like a 24.28%, which again surpassed all of the previous ones put together. So, competitively, I mean, DC has just kicked butt the last couple of months. I would really like to see all of the publishers. Marvel, all the you know, Boom, Dynamite, Avatar, Zenoscope, everybody really bring in their A game in 2012, if not sooner, and really leveraging, I think, the interest there is in comics and acceptance of it. This is something that DC's getting some people in the door, but are the books going to be able to keep them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the items here at rank, I think it's 188, is Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number 3. I think they've finally gotten the... wreckage exploded, he's in the hospital bed or whatever, but I mean, this is so decompressed.
I didn't make it past the first issue of that one, but I know what you're talking about on that.
The She's Breaking Up line, which we get, you know, 30 seconds in on the, not even that, in the opening credits. I forget how long it took in the movie, the pilot movie or whatever, but tighten up the story. There's a time and a place for that kind of introspective, navel-gazing, decompressed story or whatever. But man, if every book is that way, do you really expect people to come back? That, I think, is really going to be what's going to be a deciding factor with DC, is a lot of these things are being very much told, really as much for the trade format as the comic format. I'm going to argue more for the trade. Do those trades work really well for DC? Do they not? Are we going to get to the point where people realize, well, this still is a 5-part or 6-part or 4-part or whatever story? I'll just wait for that trade. Are we going to see people jumping off when the storylines flip? Or jumping on? I doubt jumping on. I don't know. What else do we have that looked interesting on here? A lot of the stuff we would usually talk about down at the bottom of the list kind of is below the bottom of the list this time around.
Yeah, it's got pushed off. So, you know, there's, you know, the bottom of the list, which is actually kind of surprising to me to some extent. Robert E. Howard's Savage Sword did 5,167 units. And given that it's a $7.99 book, I'm somewhat pleased that it actually did that well.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the Dark Horse anthologies that they've got that, you know, the 80-some pages in, and it's like the new Dark Horse Presents. But it's got a $7.99 price tag on it, and it's just, I'm very surprised to see that many units moving in something with such a high price point.
Well, that's one of those things where it's like, does it belong on this list, the trade list, both, neither? You know, it's... It probably fits here, but there have been a couple of times Chris and I will talk on the trade side of why is this here? It's almost more of a comic. But that's one of those where the price point and page count, I could argue either way on that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Speaking of Warlord of Mars, you know, the Marvel adaptation of the Princess of Mars book, I assume that that's an adaptation of the Princess of Mars book. At location 270 there.
Yeah, rank 270.
I mean, look at the delta there. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, that's a 64.84% drop from the first issue there. It went from 19,173 estimated units down to 6,742. That kind of a harsh drop, though, we've seen that kind of stuff before, and the fact that we didn't see that across the board on DC really pleases me. We could see that on, like, that Wolverine and the X-Men. X titles have been doing that kind of a sharp drop. We saw that on Mystic, so...
Yeah, I'm just curious, you know, because Marvel's doing this, and I didn't read that one, because, I mean, I'm reading the Dynamite ones, and that pretty much fulfills my need... Well, they're putting out more Warlord of Mars books than I need to read. And then, you know, Marvel comes along and they're putting out this adaptation. I think they're, you know, because they're doing another one even that's based on, you know, what's going to be the movie that's coming out. Or maybe it's the same one as this. But it's just, how much John Carter do we need to have on the comic stands?
It's feast or famine, it seems like. Sometimes you get almost nothing and suddenly all of it, you know? The one that just caught my eye was down at rank 296 from Marvel. It's Kazar number 5. 5,352 estimated units, down about 6.6% from the previous issue. That is, I believe, by far the lowest I have ever seen a mainstream Marvel book sell. I'm having a hard time thinking of any I've seen go below 10,000 for mainstream Marvel. But that's...
This one a couple slots down from that, the Vampire Marvel Undead. That's one of those handbook things?
That's a handbook thing, yeah. Okay. It's not bad, but again, different than, you know, you're actually having a mini-series trudge down that far. Now, yeah. Actually, that brings to mind the other question, because I think it shipped in October from Marvel, of where, what was the one they canceled at issue 5? All Winners Squad, Band of Heroes, number 5. It is there at rank 250 with 7,497 units. So just under 7,500 units. That was going to be an 8-issue series. They cut it off with that 5th issue after, I believe, it came out.
Without even, you know, and, you know, leaving the story undone.
Yeah.
Very irritating. You know, I was unamused.
But, you know, you look a few slots, there are actually quite a few, 275 with Mystic number 3, Cross-Gen Universe, you know, 6,471 units, Captain America Corps number 5, 9,981 units. This is kind of that fundamental problem I think comics have these days. Either there's too many, either they're not marketed well, either they're just not good enough or retain... There's not the return on the investment or whatever. Comics should not be selling this low. I mean, you could fit really the entire readership of Kazar in the big hall at DC Comic Con or the San Diego Comic Con or whatever. I mean, in you know, Hall H there or whatever, and have room left over. Probably actually about 1,000 seats left over.
Well, you know, you could fit everyone reading Fear Itself into a football stadium, you know.
Yeah, but football stadiums are not tiny.
I know, but still, you know, yeah. The fact that you can get them all someplace, that you can see them all in one place, it's still, you know, puts it in perspective.
Yeah. You know, this is all a drop in the bucket compared to DVD sales, video game sales, that kind of stuff. And I've got to think a lot of that comes down to how much are you paying per installment, and do you get a complete installment or a partial installment? You know, that Kazar number 5 is the finale of a 5-part story, I believe. That All Winners Squad Band of Heroes number 5 is the 5th part, not the finale of an 8-part story that will never be finished. You know, it's every time they cut something off at the knees like that, it makes people less likely to invest in something they don't think is going to be a big seller. Because why should they commit to something the publisher isn't going to?
It absolutely has had that effect on me. You know, it's like I am going to seriously think twice about buying into any mid-tier, you know, kind of cool concept miniseries from Marvel anymore. Because they, you know, it was one thing when it was like, you know, Archaea, you know, dumping miniseries in midstream, or, you know, some other very small publisher when they're, you know, only selling a couple of thousand copies and, you know, they're a very small publisher. It, like, you know, puts them in danger of going under if they, you know, are losing money on these things, you know. But when Marvel is not going to commit to publishing a story as, you know, solicited, why do I want to risk getting an incomplete story from them?
Let's talk for just a moment for comparison about those couple of titles we've been talking about. The All-Winter Squad Band of Heroes number 5, the 7,497 units, the John Connor Princess of Mars number 2, 6,742 units, Mystic number 3, 6,471 units, and that Kazar number 5 of 5,352 units. That's a total of 26,062 units. Now, what did I say that that Walking Dead was doing over the 30,000 plus mark by a decent margin? Granted, it's got the TV show now. Kirkman's a bit of a juggernaut on that book, but still, it was originally selling down at these numbers and it worked its way up. The fact that Marvel can't find, not just Marvel, DC and other publishers can't find some of the talent, can't get the books to the market, success in the market, just astounds me. You know, I wouldn't expect some of these to have done gangbusters, particularly that Kazar. That was a Marvel book I didn't get. And I'm getting most of the Marvel Universe. I mean, I think that was, I'm trying to think of any other book that month I didn't get that was part of the Marvel Universe. The publishers need to turn that around.
Well, that's to say, if it's like a Marvel book that they managed to like not want you, that you don't want to get, you know, they need to reevaluate. Should just call you up and say, "Would you buy this, John?" And if you say no, then they probably shouldn't publish it.
Measure the laughter. It was just a chuckle. Oh, he's still going. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I'd be happy to do it. I mean. And I'm willing to bet I'd be wrong on some of this, and there's a definite audience that has different tastes than me, and there's no problem with that. But
I think that's true if they're going with the genre book, but if they're actually going and publishing a superhero book and you say no, then it's probably going to sell bad, you know. And Kazar is not a genre book. I mean, this was a, you know, Kazar's a Marvel superhero. He doesn't wear the costume and everything, but he's firmly established as a superhero.
I think he's a little more genre than you're giving him credit for, but in the bottom line, Marvel had nothing really to speak of over the 60,000 mark this month that's likely to be there next month. I mean, Incredible Hulk and Wolverine X-Men number 1, both of those could tumble below 60,000 easily. Probably won't, but they could. it comes down to look at how much of the Marvel stuff in the past, the DC stuff, was really mid to low list titles. You know, it comes back to reader retention, which I'm going to harp on that return on the investment. Do I feel like I'm getting my money's worth? Did this just go from cliffhanger to cliffhanger and move the chess pieces on the board a little? Is it marking time, or is it something that, you know, if you were to put up the first 100 issues of Fantastic Four, and you know, there are going to be a couple issues I'm sure, Bob, you would point to and say, oh, that's where Galactus came. This was a big issue because that's where the first issue of this, or appearance of this character, or whatever. I mean, you look at the first 100 issues of, are there any titles these days that make it to 100? Do they have that kind of hallmark moments per issue, or is it, well, this arc was when this happened?
Right.
I really think they need to get away from the arc mentality. Now, one other one I want to mention real quick in terms of Marvel and kind of reversing of decisions or whatever. Alpha Flight started out as a 7-issue miniseries with a 0.1 issue, got expanded to 8, I guess, because they couldn't count, went to an ongoing and has been canceled as of 8. Issue 5 here is on the list at rank 115 with 20,731 units, down about 10% from the previous issue. 20,000 units, though, these days are not that bad. It's selling better than actually quite a few Marvel books, including, wow, some of these Spider Island miniseries did not do well at all.
Oof. That,
Heroes for Hire, number 1, 15,079 units. Cloak and Dagger 3, 14,929 units. Amazing Spider-Girl number 3 for Spider Island, 14,248 units. Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 3, 12,920 units. There's probably a few others hidden in here somewhere. I really think the era of the events, the mini events, with all of these connected miniseries and side stories and stuff, I think that's going to hopefully die out for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, need to focus on just better individual titles.
As much as I'm not that big of a fan of the, what do we want to call them? The extraneous miniseries, I guess is a good way to say it.
We got to find a good term for that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, as much as that's kind of goofy and everything, I really think that the event, or the, not even really, I mean, Spider Island is kind of a mini event, I guess we're calling it, you know,
an
but
incident
those
or somewhere in there, yeah, a regional event. Yeah, it's
right. Those things coming along and infringing on a title is far worse, in my opinion, you know. So what, you know, they came in and, you know, they took over Herc, and all you see Hercules, you know,
that's
wearing
fair,
a Spider-Man outfit climbing down a wall. You see, you know, Black Panther, like, with extra arms growing out of him, swinging on a web. I mean, I didn't read these comics. I just saw the covers of them at the store because I had stopped getting them. You know,
I read them.
You know, it's like, I can't imagine they were on par with the surrounding issues of those series as you're shoehorning this event into the series.
I think the Herc one was decent. Did they need to do it? No. There were a few, like with the Venom stuff, where it really made sense for it to happen. I agree, some of them, yeah, were a bit forced and a bit further afield than they should have been. But between the Shanghaiing of other titles, the spreading out to other things, it's like a mini cluster of titles or whatever. It spreads the story out too wide, too far, diffuses the sales impact of any of it, and frankly, I think it scares people off. You know, Fear Itself, Homefront number 7, that was coming out of, you know, or again, connected to the big event. It's down here at rank 135 with 17,339 units. Compare that to, you know, the sales of Fear Itself, number 7, of, you know, 95,600 almost. Huge, huge difference there. I think writers, creators, publishers need to get over decompressed storylines, the big sprawling epic saga stuff. And I'm not saying make every title self-contained, never shall the characters ever meet again, no. But have something where they're tighter stories, they're when the characters interact and meet, they're actually doing something, not all just happening to be in the big, you know, ambiguous fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look back at Crisis on Infinite Earths, and protecting the tuning forks may have been contrived, but you could tell who was protecting it and how they were protecting it, and they were doing it in character. I defy somebody to go look at Fear Itself number 7 and explain to me what the various weapons were, why they were even important to the story. You know, it's a lot of these sales, I think, are unfortunately deserved due to the quality and sprawling, lethargic nature of the story. If they were telling tighter stories, if they were really, I don't want to say bringing their A game or whatever, but making people anxious awaiting for that next issue. I mean, to me, the go-to example of this is Lost, back when that was on the air. People were really curious, what's going to happen next? May not have understood everything that happened that issue, but part of it is because there was mystery, we'll find that out later, but there was enough payoff, they moved forward, whatever, and it was a go in, tell a really good episode that's also part of a big arc, big overall story, and then get out. End on a strong reveal, a strong note, not necessarily a cliffhanger, but a, oh wow, I didn't see that coming kind of, you know, moment. I'm not seeing that these days for the comics, particularly these doing the lower numbers, even some of the higher ones. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why some of the higher ones quickly get down to the lower numbers. I've got a lot of hope right now based on, you know, DC apparently getting a lot of readers into the comic shops. A lot of interest digitally is happening right now. The Marvel app, I think it is, or the Comixology app has been the top grossing app in the iTunes store for, what, 8-9 weeks in a row or something.
Yep.
Don't know quite what that equates to.
Well, I've been reading the press releases on that, and, you know, they're saying that that's revenue taken in, and since I believe it's a free app, that means that people are buying comics through it. You know, they're not just downloading free comics, because the things that make something a top app on the store, you know, it's dollars that's taken in. So that means that people are actually buying and spending money on comics more so than other things.
Does that mean that app has generated more money than the next app, therefore it beat it out that way?
That's what the press releases have said.
Okay, so my understanding is the average app or whatever would be easily $10 or less. I believe I saw somewhere that the one right below it was a $9.99 or $9.95 or whatever, $10 or under. So that essentially means that really people are buying about 3 comics. That's not bad, but to me that's not all that impressive either. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to I don't have a good enough sense of what the competition is. I mean, if you're comparing it to an app that's a 99-cent game or whatever, yeah, it's going to take a single hardcore reader or two to blow some of the other apps out of the water if somebody flips to digital. It's going to be interesting to see where the digital stuff goes. It's nice to see that it doesn't seem to be decimating or really even seriously impacting at all the print sales so far. You know, we'll see how that goes going forward, of course. I do think it's looking to be an additional revenue stream, not a cannibalistic one, like, frankly, trades were. I think a lot of why we've got sales where we do is I'll just wait for the trade. People may not get the trade, but they could. Therefore, the trades ate into first back-issue sales and then new-issue sales.
Right.
So, but at this point, I'm really curious how things are going to look next month. I'm expecting the third issues for DC to do pretty well. Not expecting to see either the first or really even the second issues, for the most part, showing up on the list next month. So I think it'll be a much closer fight between Marvel and DC. Hopefully the other publishers will do pretty well too. But definitely it's looking to be an interesting time right now in comics.
Oh, absolutely.
So you got anything else, or are we pretty much done?
I think that pretty much does it. You know, we've got, I think what we've gotten here is turning out about as good as we could have expected. And it's still, as we said before the, you know, the relaunch started, and people are saying, hey, we talk a lot about DC, but, you know, DC, it's like news right now, and I think it's interesting to talk about. But until, you know, you're 6 months in and some of the dust settles and you get to some steady state, it's going to be really hard to make a final judgment. But, you know, for the first couple of months, they've done what they set out to do, I think. They've shaken things up. And even though they stated when they talked to you out at San Diego that, you know, it wasn't their intent to explicitly go and become the number one, they did that. You know, I actually appreciate the fact that they weren't posturing that way, but they did it. You know,
well, and their goal was very much they want to get new readers, they want to expand the base, they want to have steady sales, and that's part of why I put that benchmark of 3.2 million together. Can they retain sales? Now, granted, they may need more titles to do it, and because there's going to be attrition, whatever. But to me, the tide kind of turns, I don't want to say negative or whatever, but less in their favor the minute the DC Universe line drops below that benchmark of where it started. And it may be a while before it does it, and maybe soon before it does it. But the fact that they are looking at readers about, you know, looking and partnering, I think, very successfully with the retailer community and supporting the retailer community. I mean, DC has shouldered such a huge amount of the risk on this by allowing for returnability and really, I think, working with the retailers and keeping the books available and in print so successfully. I mean, this has been, at least initially so far, it has exceeded my expectations significantly. I'm very pleased with that, very pleasantly surprised by that, and I think the guys at DC should be very happy with that in terms of the sales. Creatively, I'll be honest, it has not met some of my expectations. When they were talking about shaking up storytelling, things, I mean, they're reassessing how they do business, all of that. A lot of these comics read as if they had been done a year ago in terms of same storytelling mentality, sprawling stories, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be, like you said, a while before the dust settles, I think. The minute the returnability stops, that's going to potentially be a deciding point for a lot of retailers of you know, how things go from there. Hopefully, the incentives, I know that, like, DCBS has been giving up through the fifth issues even. You know, buy them all, get an extra percentage discount or whatever. It's like, it's keeping me on a couple of books I otherwise would have dropped. Now, will it keep me on them long enough to grow to like them or whatever? I don't know. But these things are happening to allow audience, you know, build-up or whatever to happen. Yes, we're talking a lot about DC. I think part of that, particularly this month, is DC was the majority of the list, even. But I don't think we're really necessarily skimping on the others. I think if Marvel wants us to talk about them more, they need to sell better. And really, we've talked about a lot of Marvel in the past very favorably, and we've talked about a lot of the other publishers. You know, I personally talk about on the list what interests me at the moment. I would love for this to get to the point where nobody has such a dominating percentage of the breakdown of the top 300 that we really are obligated to really talk about everything, because everybody's doing good stuff. I think that'll be a while before that happens, if ever.
Yeah.
So, but should be interesting next month. Hopefully the number threes will do pretty well. At this point, it's anyone's guess how the rest of the year is going to turn out. But nice to see some stuff closing in on the 200,000, given how weak the year started out. So, that do it?
Does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why, or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.